Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on X, at Matthew Soucy. The show is available on iTunes, and like all the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. I will have a guest in a little bit, but I wanted to start the show. Somebody had asked me if I was going to talk about Matthew Perry this week, and sad, of course, and with his career, and dying at such a young age. It's young. Best known for television. That's not a slight. It's just kind of what it is. But I went through, you know, because every cast member of Friends worked on some film of some kind when they were taking a break from the show. But anyway, I went back to Perry's IMDb. Credits go all the way back to 1979. You know, yeah, he did a slew of stuff before Friends. He was one of those just kind of working on stuff. And I forgot he had a small role in A Night in the Life of Jimmy Reardon from 1988, which may, you know, add that to the rewatch list. And then we get into, you know, the stuff that he worked on while taking a break from the television show, like Fools Rush In, Almost Heroes, Three to Tango. Of course, probably the big one for him, The Whole Nine Yards, which led to The Whole 10 Yards. I remember Serving Sarah and not liking that at all. Numb, which is probably something that needs to get a rewatch, with him as the lead, story of a chronically depressed screenwriter desperately trying to cure his conditions when he meets the girl of his dreams. In 17 again, which, you know, for what it is kind of fun. But obviously went back and did more television and, just kept working. So salute to Matthew. By the way, the sarcasm class in SNL is a personal favorite. So there is that. There's not going to be a show next week. I have some family stuff. I think if you're a longtime listener of the show, you heard about it a little bit. So I'm just kind of all over the place this week. I apologize. It's going to be a very busy weekend for me. The guys over at Golden Globus Theater are doing Night Killer, a film that has no killings going on at night. So that is happening. And I recently spoke with one of my usual suspects. I had a Terry Garr moment, I'm happy to say. And what I mean by that is when the show started, back when it was live Fridays at 5 o'clock on WFYI HD2, you know, it was exciting because it was live for an hour. And if a guest dropped out, then I had two folks that I could have as backup guests. And if you're a longtime Letterman fan, it was the Tony Randall and Terry Garr of the early incarnations of Film Sociology. And anyway, I was supposed to have a guest in studio to talk about a film series. And Julia, I hope you're feeling better. But she was under the weather. And I brought in Taffy DeVee, who is my new Terry Garr. So that was kind of fun. And it was a kind of a long afternoon, but it was okay. We got to catch up on a lot of things. So we're going to start things off with my chat with Taffy about the film noir series, which is happening at the Can-Can. And then we talked about what we watch for Halloween, and we just kind of went all over the place as one does. But of course, Taffy has her own intro.
Moneypenny. What gives?
Me, given an ounce of encouragement. You never take me to dinner looking like this, James. You never take me to dinner, period.
I would, you know. Only Anne would have me court-martialed for illegal use of government property.
Flattery will get you nowhere, but don't stop trying.
I've never been to Istanbul.
You've never been to Istanbul?
No.
Where the moonlight on the Bosphorus is irresistible.
Maybe I should get you to take me there someday. I've tried everything else.
Darling Moneypenny, you know I never even look at another woman.
Oh, really, James?
Mm-hmm. Let me tell you the secret of the world.
Now, what do you know about gold, Moneypenny?
Oh, the only gold I know about is the kind you wear. You know, on the third finger of your left hand.
Hmm. Well, one of these days, we really must look into that.
Well, what about tonight? You come around for dinner, and I'll cook you a beautiful angel cake.
Well, nothing would give me greater pleasure, but unfortunately, I do have a business appointment.
That's the flimsiest excuse you've ever given me. Ah, well, some girls have all the luck. Who is she, James?
She is me, Miss Moneypenny.
And kindly omit the customary byplay with 007. He's dining with me, and
I don't want him to be late.
So there's hope for me yet.
Moneypenny, won't you ever believe me?
In you go, sir.
Thank you, ma'am.
Oh, by the way, how was the girl?
Which girl?
The Chinese one we fixed you up with.
Oh, another 5 minutes that I found out.
She'll never know what she missed.
Miss Moneypenny,
give 007 the password we've agreed with Japanese SIS.
Yes, sir. We tried to think of something that you wouldn't forget.
Yes.
I love you. Repeat it, please, to make sure you get it.
Don't worry. I get it.
Your passport is quite in order.
Well, anyone seeing you in that outfit, Moneypenny, would most certainly be discouraged from leaving the country. What can I bring you back from Holland?
A diamond? In a ring?
Would you settle for a tulip?
Yes.
So, Taffy, this is your favorite time of the year, apparently. The mixture where October turns into November.
It's the perfect time of year for me, yes, because we get the tail end of spooky season, which is truly my time to shine, and then right into Noirvember. So I bust out the seamed stockings and my, you know, Miller's Crossing slang. And
thank you, Marcia Gayhart.
I insist on everybody calling me a dame or a broad.
Well, we've already done that, as you know. But I did, seriously. So I do want to say shout out to my buddy Julia, who can hopefully she is on the mend. But Julia Ritchie is going to be hosting Noirvember at the Can-Can. And since we will talk about this, so this is happening three weekends in November, and Sunday at 5 o'clock. And then she'll be hosting, as well as a discussion by the Church of Cinema. So for Noirvember at the Can-Can, November 5th, 6th, and 8th, and Julia, like I said, Julia will be hosting the Sunday screening, The Maltese Falcon.
Oh, fantastic.
Your history with that show. It seems like it was on TV constantly growing up.
It was. And it might have been my introduction to noir. I come from a real movie happy family.
So Mary Astor was your gateway.
Yeah. It's not my favorite Bogart. In a Lonely Place is my favorite.
Ooh,
Bogart.
Boy.
I know. Dark. But it is such a great movie, and it's so much fun. And it's a great way in. Like, if people are curious about noir, it has enough familiarity just in the popular consciousness that people feel comfortable with it.
Right.
And it clips right along.
It does.
It's great. And that cast, come on with that cast.
Sydney Greenstreet, Peter Lorre.
It was his first role, 61 years old.
See, it's not just for John Houseman anymore.
That's right. So good.
And also, I think Warner Brother Cartoons had some part of that. We had seen the Peter Lorre type character.
Absolutely.
We've seen giant Sydney Greenstreet in many incarnations. I know. I think it was John Houseman that played him in The Cheap Detective, which was the send-off with Peter Falk. So, you know, it's parodied itself and come around full circle.
Right. But it's terrific. And Elisha Cook Jr.
Yeah.
Always the best patsy. If you need a patsy, get that man.
And it's fun to see, because, him being the kind of attempted tough guy.
Bless his heart.
Bless. and working up until, because also check out Asphalt Jungle. I know he's in the first Blackula, which was kind of fun to see some old school guys in that picture. So, but yeah, that's definitely worth checking out on the 5th, 6th, and 8th, November 12th, 14th, and 15th.
Yeah.
Sunset Boulevard.
Oh yeah.
You have your turban.
I can't help it. I have a penchant for younger men and wearing turbans.
It's the podcast that got small.
It is the podcast that got small. That movie is truly part of my origin story. I was obsessed with that movie even really young. I can remember, and in fact, it's, you know, family mythology that my mother even says. I would swan around the house with like a fake turban that I had made out of a t-shirt. And I was obsessed with this idea of like an elder, faded glamour girl, and now I am one. It's absolutely incredible. It looks amazing. It's got the Edith Head costumes, which are phenomenal, of course.
Yes.
It's got her doing this really, really brave role for her because she was, in essence, playing herself, and that as an ego trip is a little rough.
And being fully aware,
absolutely.
Also, under the guy having Billy Wilder as your guide also helps.
That doesn't hurt things at all. You know that her bed in her bedroom was actually one of the props from one of her movies.
Nice.
Yeah, just incredible stuff. Like really layered in there. I love everything about it. I quote it more than other people quote Big Lebowski.
We all have.
I scare off young screenwriters all the time.
But are they as handsome as William Holden?
Some of them are.
just writers, just don't take a header onto a coffee table, please.
Right.
Don't do that.
But it's super fantastic, and there's this moment that I always want people who have really watched that movie. Or maybe they're watching it for the first time, to look out for, because I always want to talk about it forever, and it's about Max, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So at one point when they arrive at the studio, Max is saying, yes, my offices used to be up there, and the walls were all black patent leather. What? Max? Your walls in your office were black patent leather? Okay. And then... later, he is talking about the devotion of the fans to Ms. Desmond, and says that, you know, a Maharaja paid a pretty price for one of her stockings and later strangled himself with it. Max definitely brokered that deal, right?
Right.
Like, Max is a stone cold perv. Mm-hmm. And I love it. I love it.
And also, now you discovered that you discovered Sunset Boulevard before Carol Burnett?
It was probably concurrently.
Okay.
Because I was obsessed with the Carol Burnett show. I used to cry when it went on hiatus for the summer.
Yes.
There are pictures of me dressed as Mrs. O'Higgins.
Thank you, by the way.
And there are many, like that, what did they call her? What was her name in that? What was the fake name that they used?
We will check that.
Nora Desmond, maybe.
Okay.
Really fantastic. And just as a person who is a fan of Carol Burnett, of Sunset Boulevard, and of Edward Gorey, if you look closely at the costumes that that were made for the Carol Burnett show.
Bob Mackie.
Which are Bob Mackie, of course. Always there, the genius of Bob Mackie with the punchlines on things. His looks for her are really very reflective of Edward Gorey's illustrations.
Yes.
Even more so than the looks in the film itself, which is just a terrific confluence of things that I love.
Nora Desmond, you were correct.
Okay.
You were
right.
That reminds me, speaking of Gorey, and I forgot to mention this on my show last week, when discussing Theater of Blood, I had forgotten, and I guess I hadn't put two and two together, but Vincent Price and Diana Rigg got along so well working on that.
Oh.
And when Price's contract was up hosting Mystery on PBS. According to letter, he's the one who recommended Diana Rigg.
Oh, that's
take
fantastic.
Over the hosting duties. So very, beautiful. Very cool. And if you if why is this up? Look, go on YouTube. You'll find a gory esque animated opening.
Yeah, it was in fact gory.
What? Okay, so there you go. Yep. Yes. Yeah.
Fainting onto a
onto a brick
headstone.
Wall or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Lovely. Lovely. Really great stuff. Yeah. I was a goth from the giddy up.
Yes. Yes, you were. And and so my story on this is here at the station. Back when I was live in the studio on Saturdays, I had a rule when I brought my kid in because I was on the air from then 5 until 10, and I said, if you come to work with me, because the thing was, the kid was going to sit at my desk and just watch YouTube clips all day and all that sort of thing. And so we would come in early and I said, but you have to watch a film of my choosing and then you can go through sit at my desk and not let me have my desk. So, Casablanca. Now there's a film festival my kid could make on the films that I made them watch and then they forgot.
Right.
But Cabaret, Casablanca, but the one that really hit was Sunset Boulevard. And
beautiful.
And we want to thank, I always thank Kristen Wiig for introducing my kid to Gloria Swanson in Sunset Boulevard because of the SNL sketch.
I'm a pirate.
Which we still quote, get off my ship or the girl dies.
I love that. I love those kinds of ways in to learn about things, whether it's classical music from Warner Brothers cartoons.
Correct.
Or learning about classic film from a bit on SNL.
Yep.
I think that that's terrific. And I think that that kind of organic discovery process is really beautiful and really sort of attaches you to things in a different way. And, you know, algorithms and AI might be okay for some folks, but I sure like that stumbling upon things.
Yep.
You know?
Now, the other film that is at Sunset Boulevard is November 12th, 14th, and 15th. And then November 19th, 19th, 21st, 22nd. This is one I don't know and I've not seen, but it's Louis Malle's Elevator to the Gallows.
I have not seen that one either.
So, friends, you have a chance to see an old film on a big screen, and if you go on Sundays, Julia will be there discussing it, and that's a golden opportunity. So,
and it's so great. I love it when you can get some commentary from experts.
Yes.
That just makes everything a richer experience. I'm a big old nerd for it. So, yeah, I'll be there front and center.
Absolutely. So that is happening at the Can-Can Theater here in Indy. I also want to thank my phone. 1958, yeah, directed by the great Louis Malle. Restless Femme Fatale, Florence, played by Jean Moreau. Recruits her lover, Julienne, played by Maurice Rene, to murder her wealthy husband, Simon, Jean Wall, in his office and make it appear a suicide. The dirty deed is done eagerly but becomes trapped in an elevator when he returns to remove a key piece of evidence he had accidentally left behind. So that's,
oh, I love
that's
it
Louis
already.
Malle right
there. Yeah,
yes.
That sounds great.
So all of that is happening over at the Can-Can. So how was your Halloween?
Oh, well, the actual Halloween night was fairly uneventful, but I had a good ramp up to it. Couple of opportunities to get dolled up and, you know, show my true dark colors.
Uh-huh.
And I always look forward to that, although I don't necessarily wait for Halloween for it.
We know, dear.
Yeah, I know. but it was terrific, and I watched, on Halloween Day, I marathoned a whole bunch of movies. I kind of dug into the creepy classics of the 70s. And so I did Wicker Man.
The original. The only
one
that matters.
Absolutely. The only one that matters. Fantastic. I did Don't Look Now.
Oh.
I know.
Believe that is getting a 4K Blu-ray reissue on Criterion.
Nice.
That's a lot of... That's a lot of Julian Donald.
It is. It's really
there
it's
is
great,
a
though.
Yeah, look it up. There is a piece of folklore that
it was
they,
real.
They yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, it is a great movie.
And get your little raincoat.
While not, I guess some people wouldn't classify it as horror specific. It is adjacent, at least.
Yes.
And certainly moody and great.
I watched Nicholas Rogue.
Yeah, yeah. And I watched the 70s Body Snatchers for a little more Donald Sutherland in there.
I got that from Kino Lorber, I think, last year.
Excellent.
And so, yeah, holds up still.
It still holds up. It's so great, too, when you revisit it. And spoiler alert, right from the jump, right from the opening credits, we are planting the seeds. But we're seeing what's happening unfold before us. We're just not really seeing it yet. And I find that really exciting.
And Robert Duvall on a swing.
Yeah.
It's
great.
Randomly.
It's great. Yeah. So love that one. And let's see what else. And I checked out The Brood again because you know how much I love Oliver Reed.
Oliver Reed. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. That is terrific. It is just as weird and heavy and strange as I remembered, because
mm-hmm.
It had been many years since I had seen it.
That was one, and the Cronenberg films of the late 70s, early 80s were kind of cable staples.
Yeah,
and in my world, because there was The Brood, Scanners,
of course,
Videodrome.
Yeah,
three were on constantly. And
oh, Debbie Harry, I love you.
Yeah, it's one thing to watch them at that age, because as a kid, all I remember were the Killer Babies,
right?
Exploding Head, and a videotape shoved through your abdomen, and you just go, dude, that's messed up.
Yeah,
and so
weird.
Yeah, it's weird. It's messed up, but it's kind of cool. And so yeah. I want to revisit those now that I have more life experience and
absolutely.
I'm sure it holds up.
They really do, and I have revisited these recently, and I have to say that Scanners, my least favorite upon revisiting them. The Brood was very strange and very good, but Videodrome, man. That one hits hard and is really terrific, and the performances are great, and it really starts to give you that direction that Cronenberg's going to start going with body horror,
uh-huh.
right? Like really kind of big swings for that we'll start to see later in kind of my favorite era of him, which is a little later, because Crash is my favorite.
Yes.
I know that must come as a surprise to you.
Shocking.
Yeah, I know.
Nice leg wound, by the way.
well, thank you.
Have you had that have you had that fake tattoo yet?
No, but now this.
Now you're gonna.
My costume for next year is definitely going to be the garter belt and the wound. So, and if you don't know, if you've not seen this movie, and you do go and see it and revisit what we're saying here, you'll disown us because it's terrible. We are terrible people.
Thank you. I resemble that remark. No, and it's also, there's also an episode of it on You Must Remember This, if
yes.
you're shamelessly plugging other podcasts.
Oh my gosh.
Erotic
well,
90s was
that
a fun
whole
romp.
Series
yeah.
is. I love that show anyway.
Yes.
It's fantastic. But when she did the two series of the erotic cinema of the 80s and 90s, that is just right in my wheelhouse.
Yep.
Yes. And
yeah.
I couldn't get enough of it. And I'm really sad that it's winding up now. It's just terrific.
Yeah.
And if you want to learn more about film in an incredibly accessible and interesting way from somebody who is just the most well-researched
yes.
Around. Check out Karina Longworth.
Going back to noir for a little
yes,
bit, because
please,
neo-noir, which became yes. huge in the 80s, and one of the first episodes they discussed, I know this will explain a lot, but I was 11 when I saw Body Heat.
Yeah, me too. And now you know everything you need to know about us.
Yeah.
You're not very bright, are you? I love that in a man.
That had huge effects.
Okay, and I saw American Gigolo right around then
oh,
as
wow.
well. Did you also
I, no,
take
that
one?
I didn't see in the theater.
Okay, so I did because permissive parenting of the 70s and 80s, and I was more like a little sidekick, right? Like I was
yes.
just a little adult sidekick, a wisecracking kid, and there were no rules in terms of what I could see. And so I saw both of those, and I think that unquestionably they had an effect on me.
Oh, yeah.
And I really, I love them both. And while certainly Body Heat is more of a direct line back to noir.
Yeah.
I mean, because we're really doing just a little different than Double Indemnity.
Yes.
But the bad guy gets to win, which is delightful because we didn't have the Hays Code to deal with. Kathleen Turner was so exceptional, as was William Hurt. They were incredible, and they got to do things that in a traditional noir you did not get to do. And I don't just mean the sex. Although I do mean the
although
sex.
There is, yeah.
Yeah, I do mean that. But more than that, you got to see more interesting, nuanced characters. You got to see more of her kind of unraveling and to see her win in the end. It is a great, great movie. And have you seen my cosplay, that one?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Okay, good.
Oh, yeah. You post, I know you post that at least once a year.
I try to.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, you do.
I would do it more often if I could.
It's also, that's a lot of broken glass, though, around your house, so you have to be careful.
Nobody's bashed in a window to get at me yet.
You go to an island, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so that was, I was 11. So and,
fantastic.
And with that, I tell the story. I'm on my honeymoon with my wife. We did a week in Paris, and then we did a week in London, and we get to London, and there's a giant billboard of Kathleen Turner as Mrs. Robinson in The Graduate on the West End, and I stopped walking.
Yeah.
And my new bride turns to me and goes, "You want to see that?" And I was like, "Not on my honeymoon.
This is not the time nor the place."
No. And we had seen a production of The Graduate before, or The Graduate with a friend of ours down in Memphis. So
excellent.
But I hated the play. It was the novel and the film about lost youth got transferred into a sitcom play.
Ooh.
So,
ooh,
yeah.
I don't like that.
Yeah. So
I don't like that.
But anyway,
that's the role that calls to me, of course, Mrs. Robinson.
Of course.
Yeah. So maybe one day.
You're the prettiest of all my parents' friends.
I don't know what you're talking about.
So cooler heads prevailed. We saw other shows. It was fine.
And you were on your honeymoon.
We was.
How many years now?
24.
I love it. I love it.
24. So now you also mentioned American Gigolo, which has elements of noir, but it also has elements of the Paul Schrader white dude going down a downward spiral because that's his specialty.
I'm a huge Schrader fan.
As
so,
am I.
Yeah, okay, great.
But
great,
there is that element of it because he has everything and then...
Always,
so.
Yeah. But boy, I really, like, I think as a kid, I was just sort of like, well, that guy's really hot and I love the soundtrack. And, you know, like, a lot of things are not sinking in about the fact that this is really about loneliness and that clearly they're masking it a bit, but Julian is gay. Or at least partially.
Yeah, we couldn't go there
we
with
couldn't
certain
do that. That
film.
It was
yeah.
1980, I think. 80, 81, yeah. But upon revisiting it, I really realized how impressed I was with Richard Gere's acting. Because, yes, he painfully beautiful, but he brought some real gravitas to it. And he really broke my heart in that. It's just a chasm of loneliness, and it's really beautiful and troubling. And it's a solid movie. It's more than just the, like, awesome Armani.
Looks cool. Sounds cool.
It sounds cool.
Marauder, all that.
Oh, yeah. Big Marauder fan.
Yeah.
So it has all of those elements that can draw you in, but it's a great movie that really does hold up.
We will add that to the rewatch list. So there is that. Okay. So my, let's see, on Halloween and what was I doing Saturday? I was not there. I was doing, anyway. but I got to revisit the 1974 blaxploitation zombie classic Sugar Hill.
Oh, nice.
Which Abdul and I have talked about endlessly on this show. And it is a woman who is her husband or her man runs Club Haiti in beautiful Houston, Texas. First off, you can't have a Haitian club. Not like this. This is at the beginning, there is a voodoo ritual going on. Or is it? Then we turned out, oh, no, this is a stage show. And I'm like, yeah, you can't have a club like this these days.
Oh, no.
So it's not the Cotton Club, but it's... So the mob, of course, wants to buy the venue. They kill the guy. She goes to a voodoo priest voodoo queen for revenge. And
as one does,
and starts taking them out one by one.
Right.
Now, for you pop culture fans out there, the old voodoo queen that she talks to is played by the great Zara Cully, a.k.a. Mother Jefferson. From the Jefferson. Yes, yes.
Oh, my goodness.
This was a, I want to say she was a, I think she was a Ziegfeld player, but she goes all the way back to the African-American theater of the 30s and 40s. So, you know, obviously later in life got to do a handful of films, this being one of them, and then got major notice playing George Jefferson's mom.
Right.
But she's in this. One of the thugs is played by Charles Robinson, for you fans of Night Court.
Fantastic.
Yes, he was a Houston actor. I'd forgotten that he was in this. He had a much bigger role in the film before or after this called The Black Gestapo. Yeah, they did that. And
yikes.
years ago, my wife and I got to go to a Heartland gala back when it was at the Field House, and he was there, and I got to shake his hand and say, I enjoy your work. I didn't bring up the Black Gestapo.
Okay,
I thought this was in early in Heartland's state, you know, years. I'm like, yeah, well, they'll never show that at Heartland. And I thought, no, I'm not going to.
When I met Randy Quaid, the very insane Randy Quaid, I told him.
Now, wait, was he insane then?
Oh, he was very insane then. In fact, it was him getting kicked out of the stage union forever and never to darken a stage here again. He and his wife went nuts, and I was working at the theater at that time.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, it was a nightmare scenario. Big, long story. But I did say, I loved you in Foxes. I know, I'm a jerk.
No. By the way, Foxes is one of her.
If there is a
Taffy V box set, that's
Times Square.
Times
Boxes,
Square, Foxes,
Sunset Boulevard. So that's all there.
Anyway, Marky Bay plays Sugar, and then they start taking him down one by one. So you get zombie or guys with gold painted ping pong balls put over their eyes. And, cleverly taken out one by one, which is funny because after watching Theater of Blood and another podcast, the Golden Globus guys were talking about the Fibes film. So, sitting ducks one after another.
Right.
And it follows this suit. And anyway, it was just a fun romp, and it comes with a commentary track. So you get to hear more about how this was made and, the guy who plays.
Is that a Vinegar Syndrome? Is it?
No, I forget who did it. But there's interviews with the cast. Richard Lawson is in it as well after Scream, Black Gale, Scream. But it's if I were to rank, and I hate doing lists because it's lazy writing, but it's in the group picture when it comes to blaxploitation horror. Yeah. It's in the same ballpark as Blackula and JD's Revenge. I think it's that good.
I think the sequel to Blackula is the best one.
It helps that you have Pam Grier to bounce off of.
Of course. But also, I think it's a stronger narrative. I think it's a really... Yeah, like, I love both of them.
Films, you're both pretty.
It's true. But I do think that one is even better.
Nice. So... Yeah. So anyway, it was just a good low-key, quiet Halloween week. So what else is on your watch list there? I know you have notes. You have things to say.
I always have notes.
I know you do.
No, I had I'm chronically late to the party. I never see anything when
there's nothing. Look, we all have them, whether it's something that's out in theaters or something that's been out for 50 years. So it's okay.
It's terrible that I'm like this, but thank you for validating me with that. I did see a couple of new to me watches this week.
Please.
And one was Horns, which I really, really loved. It's, dark fantasy, and it's got Harry Potter Daniel Radcliffe in it. And I really liked it. I thought it was interesting and it was beautiful, and it's, sort of a dark fairy tale thing, and I'm always into that. So that was a fun little lark. And then I saw one that I really I love the book on which this is based. There is a book called Perfume, The Story of a Murderer.
Yes.
And also for you Nirvana fans out there, the song Scentless Apprentice is based on that book.
Wow.
You're welcome. So I finally saw the film version of it.
Okay.
But it's the same title. And it is gorgeous. And I think really fascinating because you're doing a lot of having to depict scent, which is a tough trick to do
in a,
visual medium.
You'll have the John Waters
scratch
and sniff.
Right. Yeah. But it was, I thought it was deftly handled. It was really lush and gorgeous to look at. And I love the story. It's a fascinating and dark story, culminating in an amazing ending that I will not spoil, but is just terrific. I thought it held true to the book. And it... it sort of lives in a place in my head that is adjacent to the TV series of Hannibal, where there are these incredibly gorgeous visual representations of madness and obsession and artistic consumption of other human beings. And I don't know, that is turning my crank lately.
I can see that.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Nice. So I will – that's another one I will I remember seeing it when it came out, and I wasn't crazy about it. But so I will try to give it another go sometime. It looks great. I refer to it as an expensive-looking Hammer horror film with a Ken Russell finish.
And I feel like that's fair, actually.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, so it goes either way.
Yeah.
So if you like that, right. Here you go. It's kind of like when I refer to The Devils, is the film is as twisted as Vanessa Redgrave's neck in that film. So.
I love The Devil. I know, too. Again, although, really, do you, Taffy? Huge surprise there. Yeah, you like Lair of the White Worm, too? Ooh, yeah, I do. I love The Devils.
Well,
Oliver
Ken Russell
Reed.
Is just a loon. And, yeah, it also helps.
But
yeah.
Oliver Reed,
you put him in the Hot Priest category with Hot Priest. And
he is the ultimate Hot Priest. That beefy man cake. Just dark and terrible, and I love him. Whew.
Seeing, I got to see a midnight screening of that. That Keystone played it years ago.
Fantastic.
I was very lucky. And yeah, it's hard to find a print, the director's cut. So keep searching out there. It's fine.
Excellent.
Well, good. Yeah. So tell about your show. And your zine, because we already brought up the box. Or it should just be Taffy Month on the Criterion Channel so you can get
that
those.
Would be great.
Right.
That would be great. No, I have some projects that I like to work on, just sort of my own little passion projects. One of them is called Late, and it is not a podcast, really. It is a secret radio show. I'm an insomniac, and I really missed hearing late night FM DJs of your telling stories and reading poems and playing music that they picked out. Very
so Clint Eastwood in
Play Misty for
Me. Adrian
Barbeau in the Fog. In the
Tim
Warriors.
Reed. Yeah,
I do in fact call people boppers. but that whole vibe is something that I do not perceive as existing anywhere
any longer. It is a lost art.
And so I decided to do it myself. And so every show has a theme that I keep to, and I play music, and I read bits from books or poetry, and then I write things to talk about in it. And it's a good sort of ambient, late night kind of a companion. And I love doing that. And then I do have a zine.
I'm sorry, it's also, it's on a regular basis, right?
No, it's not.
But I refer to it as, it's like a pop-up.
It is. It's like a pop-up because I only do it sort of when I feel joy in doing it. And so it doesn't mean it's a monthly thing. It means that it's sporadic and, yes, like a pop-up or like a friend of mine told me, it was like when you find porn in the woods when you're a kid. You're always happy to see it, but you can't count on it and you don't know when it's going to be there. But you're thrilled when you stumble upon it.
Well, I'll take your word for that.
Yeah. Oh, please. All right. So that is sort of my main little passion project. And then I do have a zine that I wrote a couple years ago about films of the 80s that made me, that, sort of really influenced my core personality, right? And it was partially in response to the fact that in that moment, there were a lot of things happening in pop culture that were 80s nostalgia. And it was just, it felt like all dude stuff to me.
Yes.
Yes, these are things I remember, and some of them I like, to perhaps a lesser extent than pop culture would have anyone believe for a 53-year-old woman. But it just didn't feel like anybody was talking about the stuff that really hit home with me. And so I have a zine that I wrote about that. And all of this nonsense that I make and do is available on my website, which is taffetav.com.
So, and also, you know, you bring up Times Square. And this is just a great opportunity for her to bring up Times Square and foxes.
Yes. Yes.
Am I missing one? No.
Let's see. I also talk about Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Criterion title, Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Which is great. But like one of the things that really sticks in my craw about that one is if you look at the marketing of that film, which came on the heels of Porky's. It was about 11 months after Porky's.
Yes.
It's all Spicoli. Spicoli is in that movie for like less than 10 minutes. He's a minor character.
Correct.
The protagonist is a young woman who is going through all kinds of stuff. And she has real growth as a character. She is really interesting. And you only see her in one scene in the trailer. She is taking off her shirt and she does not speak. And and you get a whole lot of, hey, bud, let's party.
Right.
And it just makes me so angry even now. So it's a great movie, and I love it. And I think that, you know, aside from the cool soundtrack and, you know, people who went on to be famous and all, like, really have a look at how good that story is.
Yeah, and it's there's a reason why it's on Criterion. Advertising aside. But yeah, those characters we've seen, the ticket hustler, the football player, the nice guy who's just trying.
Bless his heart.
And Judge Reinhold. And
His car.
And his car. And his thinking of Phoebe. We all do.
Oh, well, we all do.
Wait, there's a gif, my favorite gif of Kevin Kline raising his eyebrows. So, way to go, big shooter.
Yeah, good for him. Good
for
him.
So it's, anyway.
Lock
it's,
that down. It's,
see, it sounds like that was for me, and I think I brought this up before, of the films of the S.E. Hinton novels hit hard for me.
Yes, Rumblefish, an art film for kids.
Right. And
amazing.
And they hit me before the suburban fairy tales of John Hughes. So
yeah, that's same.
Yeah, so Tex, The Outsiders, Outsiders and Rumblefish within a span of, I think, 6 months.
Amazing.
And he shot those, Francis Coppola shot them back-to-back in Tulsa. And yeah, an art house for young folks.
Mickey Rourke, when he was still so young and beautiful, and so much promise to him.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
I know.
Yeah.
So there is that. So yeah. So that's some stuff from our youth that you can check out. And
the oldsters talking about movies.
The oldsters. We're going to the flicks today.
Cinema.
The moving pictures. Let's go to a picture.
Talkies.
Wrestling.
That's right.
So we're just waiting for a 30s from the B&G gang. It'll come around eventually.
Oh, my gosh. I really look forward to that because I just want to inhabit the world of Miller's Crossing. That's the kind of dame I want to be.
I just don't want to be in the woods. So anyway, once again, Taffy, tell people where people can find you and check out your stuff.
Please visit my website. It is taffetav.com. I am also findable on all of the socials as taffetav. And I spend a lot of time. Probably more time than I should on those. New late coming hopefully soon. In fact, we were discussing that on the way here, what my next theme should be. So to be announced.
There you go. Thanks, Money Penny.
Thank you, darling.
That's Taffeta V. Look her up. She's around. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. We're going to go around the horn, and then we'll grab a pencil and find out what you've been watching this week. Over at the Tibbs Drive-In, I love drive-ins that are open in November. On screen one, Polar Express and Christmas Vacation. Over on screen two, Taylor Swift Eras Tour and V for Vendetta. Now, that's an interesting double bill right there. Screen three, Five Nights at Freddy's, then Beetlejuice, and then Five Nights again. And on screen four, wow, the originals, Silent Night, Deadly Night, followed by Black Christmas. That is happening at the Tibbs Drive-In. Wow. Over at the Skyline Drive-In, Five Nights at Freddy's. And then, yes, that's running through the 5th.
Also running through the fifth, Maximum Overdrive. So another, I love when they pull out the older titles there. So mark your calendars over at the Skyline Drive-In. On November 9th, It's a Wonderful Knife. Get it? November 10th through the 12th is a Brian De Palma double feature of Carrie and Blowout. And It's a Wonderful Knife will be shown again on the 10th through the 12th, as well as the 15th. And coming November 16th, yep, Eli Roth's Thanksgiving, 16th through the 19th. 17th through the 19th, Black Christmas. So, and they're also getting Silent Night, Deadly Night later on in the month. So all of that is happening at the Skyline Drive-In. At IU Cinema, 7 o'clock, Friday, November 3rd, Days of Being Wild. Saturday, November 4th at 7 p.m. from 1933, Dragnet Girl. Thursday, November 7th from 1993, Hunt for the Cossack Gold. Thursday, November 9th at 7 p.m. from 1969, The Color of Pomegranates. Friday, November 10th at 7 p.m., In the Mood for Love. And Saturday, November 11th, Matinee. All of that is happening at IU Cinema. And at the Historic Art Craft Theater, Friday, November 3rd, 7:30 p.m., Steel Magnolias. On Saturday, November 4th, 11 a.m. and 2 p.m., Cartoons for Cans. Saturday, 7:30 p.m. on November 4th, RoboCop. And then Friday and Saturday, November 10th and 11th, 2 and 7:30 p.m., Good Morning Vietnam. Friday and Saturday, November 17th and 18th, 2 and 7:30 p.m., Rocky. And then Friday and Saturday, 2 and 7:30 p.m., November 24th and 25th. And then 2 and 5:30 p.m., Sunday, November 26th, Muppet Christmas Carol. All of that is happening at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin. All right, friends, grab a pencil. Let's find out what you've been watching this week. Hopefully you got to watch some films that are new, some good films that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. We start with Sam Watermeyer, who writes Cobweb, Child's Play 2, and Fear.com. And he, of course, tells me, don't judge me. I wouldn't have not judged you on Child's Play 2, Sam. No, it's fine. Amanda went to the library, of course. The Black Cat with Boris Karloff and Bela Lugosi. The Raven. Something Wicked This Way Comes, which I need to revisit. I remember seeing that in the theater. Jules. Oh, I'm so glad you guys. That's one of the underrated films of the year with Ben Kingsley and Jane Curtin. It's The Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown, and the original Halloween, as well as Thriller. Thank you, Amanda. Oh, there's more from Amanda. Terror Train, The Fog, that weird DVD of Prom Night, as well as Prom Night 2 and 4. Not 3. 3 is not in there for some reason, but 2 and 4. So, yeah, I know. You gotta love copyrights. The original Frankenstein, the original Dracula, The Woodsman, The Exorcist, Last Man on Earth, Golda, and House on Haunted Hill. Thank you, Amanda. Nick Rogers writes Five Nights at Freddy's, Freelance, The Killer, Muzzle, Dario Argento's Dracula in 3D, The Zodiac Killer, Fair Play, Dark Harvest, They Live, When Evil Lurks, The Burial, and Deliverance. Thank you there. Robert Muggy writes, actually had time to start watching films again this week. Congratulations, Robert. Lynch Oz, The Pigeon Tunnel, Freaks. I need to get to my Todd Browning collection on Criterion. That was, I'm glad that is on the pile. The Old Dark House, Backstreet, The Island of Lost Souls, 13 Women, The Black Cat, Three on a Match, and Mystery of the Wax Museum. Nice stuff there. Howell writes Shaft, and R.I.P. Richard Roundtree, of course. Daniel writes Love Me or Leave Me, The Wolfman, The Invisible Man, The Skeleton Key, Watch on the Rhine, Lifeboat, Little Abner, Renfield, and Paris When It Sizzles. Jamie writes The Descendants, Descendants 2, Descendants 3, Descendants Royal Wedding, The Scream Team, Casper Meets Wendy, Five Nights at Freddy's, Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, A Haunting in Venice, and Coco. Eric writes his first views, No Hard Feelings, The Coconuts. I'm kind of surprised, Eric. Wow. Of course, the Marx Brothers' first film, The Coconuts, from 1929. The Oklahoman, Columbus, John Barrymore's Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and The Seventh Victim. Also surprised on Jekyll and Hyde, but we all have those, Eric. So, and Eric's rewatches, Olivier's Hamlet, Lon Chaney's The Phantom of the Opera, The Man Who Knew Too Much, The New Centurions, which I need to revisit, and Young Frankenstein. Okay. Helen writes Miss Congeniality. Terry writes In the Mouth of Madness, The Old Dark House, and Tales from the Crypt. Melissa writes, I went on a Disney Plus binge. Encanto, Mary Poppins Returns, Christopher Robin, plus some classic 70s silliness. Gus, The Computer Wore Tennis Shoes, and The Strongest Man in the World. And finally, Jessica, my stage dear, As Above, So Below, Demon Knight, Tales from the Crypt, Extraterrestrial, The Sadness, Dark Harvest, A Haunting in Venice, When Evil Lurks, Amazing New Horror, Halloween 3, and The Thing. And there you go, friends. That's what you've been watching this week. So hopefully you got to watch some good films that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. Friends, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. Just a reminder once again, Noirvember is happening at the Can-Can Cinema and Restaurant. The Maltese Falcon on November 5th, 6th, and 8th. Sunset Boulevard, November 12th, 14th, and 15th. Elevator to the Gallows on November 19th, 21st, and 22nd. And all 5 p.m. Sunday screenings will feature introductions by Julia Ricci, followed by discussions with the Church of Cinema. So please make a note of that. Thanks for listening. Again, no show next week because of family stuff. And hopefully I'll feel better next week. And thanks again for everybody who supported Film Sociology and WFYI during the pledge drive. WFYI.org/give, of course. And we'll do this again in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!